We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Some breaking news here on the Paul and Jordana Show.
Is it news or is it just rumor and innuendo? Well,
that's the question.
Anonymous sources.
Yeah. The New York Times took the rare step, and I have no idea if they've ever done this in their history. They've published an anonymous op-ed essay. They say they did it because the author, who they say is a senior official in the Trump administration, has an important message, and they believe publishing the essay anonymously was the only way to deliver this perspective to the readers. They, of course, then, before the essay is published, they say, we invite you to submit a question about our vetting process. So you can ask them, you can ask the Times, hey, what's going on? I'm sure they'll publish that tomorrow. Here's how we vetted this person. But they say this person is a high-level official in the Trump administration, and the essay is titled, I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. I work for the president, but like-minded colleagues and I have vowed to thwart parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. Paul and I will share with you parts of the essay, but the fact that it's anonymous kind of got our ears up a little bit, and we had a lot of questions. So we invited Jane Kirtley, who's the director of the Scylla Center at the University of Minnesota, a journalism ethicist as well as a lawyer, to get some questions answered. Jane, so happy to have you back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Does it make you cock your head to the side a little bit when you hear that it's anonymous?
Well, let me say, as the Times says, it is very rare for them to do this sort of thing. It's not unheard of, though. I mean, I've seen op-ed pieces in the Times and elsewhere that were written by, you know, people that had been physically abused either in this country or who were political, dissidents in other countries. Again, it's not unheard of. But what, of course, makes this so unusual is the timing of this right on top of the release of Bob Woodward's book, which is just chock full of allegations that are from sources whose identity is not revealed. So obviously it leaves open the huge question of, is this just more fake news? Has it all been made up, as the president is saying about Woodward's book, and I'm sure we'll say about this. But having said that, it'll be very interesting to see what the Times says, as you said, probably tomorrow, about what their vetting process was.
Jane, people that voted for President Trump knew in their heads and their hearts what they were getting, somebody who's unconventional, somebody who's not a career politician, somebody who would go in and try to shake things up. His management style is different than anything we've seen. And yet that's what they voted for. So my question to you is, do you think this could be just a style issue, concern, how he manages the shouting, the tweeting? Yes, it's unconventional. Or do you think there's actual substance behind this?
Well, you know, it's an interesting op-ed piece, mm-hmm. excuse me, because the author basically says, you know, I'm for a Republican president. I want the president to succeed. But what I'm seeing is instability that makes it impossible to move the Trump agenda forward. And so what we're basically trying to do is to, I guess, protect him from his own worst instincts or something like that. I mean, that's what I'm reading in this piece. You know, there's even a mention of the 25th Amendment and the notion that the president may be impaired, which this author basically dismisses, but says, given the instability. So it's a very contradictory piece, and it's interesting that it throws in these ideas that there's good stuff out of this administration, but it's too erratic to really move forward in a meaningful way.
The author writes, to be clear, ours is not the popular resistance of the left. This is the author now saying this. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of his policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to country. And the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's misguided impulses until he's out of office.
I mean, really, this is a very, you know, eloquent way of saying what many have been saying, which is we're going to control Trump the toddler. You know, that's the meme that we keep seeing over and over again. We're going to work around him despite himself. And one of the sentences or two sentences that I thought was really interesting was the statement, this isn't the work of the so-called deep state, it's the work of the steady state. And this, of course, is a line that we've been hearing in one variation or another, the idea that career civil servants and others would be stepping in to try to avert problems. And I mean, one of the things that's alluded to here is what the State Department's doing and what President Trump is saying, which are often at odds. Again, there's not a lot here that is particularly new or startling or inconsistent with what has been reported before. But since it purports to come from an insider, a top-level staffer and so forth, I mean, that's what's so astonishing, especially juxtaposing it with Woodward's book.
And what about critics that would say, well, it's anonymous, so how can we trust it? It could have been any Yahoo that wrote this, and the New York Times is fake news anyway, so we're not going to trust any of this.
Well,
I mean, should we?
You know, it certainly plays into the fake news narrative, and I'm confident that if the president hasn't already denounced it as fake news, I'm sure that he'll do that imminently. It is always a reality that news organizations that rely upon anonymous sources have to be prepared for that accusation, and especially in our current environment. What, as I said before, I think what will be interesting will be to see what the Times says tomorrow in response to readers' questions about why they did this, how they vetted it, and how they're so certain that this is coming from something that can be taken as credible. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, I mean, it's an opinion piece, but whether you agree with it or not, is it genuinely coming from where they say it's coming from?
Jane, one of our listeners says, Paul, chaos is not a management style. One of my favorite sayings, just because you're not paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. I mean, at this point...
You are a little paranoid.
Well, I think it pays to be. You should always be a little bit paranoid. But again, the president must feel besieged right now, embattled. Who can he trust? Closest people around him seemingly turning on him. So again, I'm not second-guessing what the president is thinking about. But again, I just wonder... If we're being totally fair.
Well, you know, whether we're being fair or not, I suppose, is a question that will be answered over the next few weeks and months as things move forward. But, you know, one very cynical way to look at this is that the New York Times basically got scooped by Woodward's book, and they want to bring out their own anonymous source to provide similar kinds of observations. You know, how universal it is, how truthful it is, how accurate it is, I mean, I guess we're going to have to see. But, you know, this is not, as I read it, this is not inconsistent with a lot of the reporting that's been going on previously, not just in Woodward's book, about, you know, the unconventional nature of Trump's governing style, which some people would say is chaotic, is crazy, you know, crazy land, crazy town, whatever.
Unpredictable sounds better.
Well, unpredictable is one way to put it. And, of course, you know, I've seen supporters of the president say that being unpredictable and nimble and so forth is a very useful negotiating tactic.
It worked for him in business, right?
But, well, you know, if we could ever see his tax returns, we would know how well it worked for him. But I guess my point is that unconventional is one thing, but now we're looking at questions about whether, you know, essentially his agenda or his mission is to dismantle a lot of the institutions. What, again, I find interesting about this op-ed is that the person that wrote it basically says there are some good things that have come out of this administration, which some people might not consider to be good, but which I'm sure his supporters do consider to be good. But nevertheless, he's saying even if you support the president, he's his own worst enemy in terms of actually implementing some of these policies.
Jane Kirtley, director of the Silla Center at the U of M. This is why we have you on, to broaden our ideas and thoughts about what's going on. And we really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being asked. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Jane. And we should mention.
I didn't think about that the New York Times feeling like, hey, we just got scooped.
They got scooped.
So we're gonna you know, throw our hat in the ring on this whole anonymous accusational.
Can we do an anonymous radio show? Huh? Can we just. Just make up voices and...
Hi, I'm Joe Blow. I'm your new drive time jock.
I urge everybody to at least, you know, read it and take a look at it. This is somebody who I imagine wants to stay anonymous also because they feel like they have an important job to do. This person wants to be remain right. in their job to keep the wheels on this bus of America.
They feel loyalty to the office of the presidency. Maybe not.
And the people, us and us,
and
that
the
say, hey, don't worry. There's grown-ups in the room. We're going to be okay. Just let us just know that somebody's on watch.
We're going to have Kim Crockett on from the conservative think tank American Experiment, which is located here, just to get her spin on this, her ideas on this, her reaction to this. Is this more fake news? Is this something we should worry about? We'll let you know. That's coming up at 5:10 on CCO. Coming up next, weather therapy, tracking a very dangerous storm called Florence and the latest rainfall tallies next on CCO.
Thanks, Dad.
He probably should.
He's my biggest supporter. Mm-hmm. We get a chance to dry out here after a very, very sloppy start.
Yeah.
Seventh wettest start to September in the Twin Cities on record. And the records go back to about 1872, and we were just on the fringe of the really heavy stuff. Waseca picked up 5.38. They've had 35.7 for the year. And some of the amounts in southern Minnesota were very impressive. The Rochester area picked up anywhere from 5 to 6 inches of rain. I saw 6.64 inches of rain 2 miles northeast of Rochester. So that's about 2 months worth of rain falling in just a few days. So, yeah, Rochester saw their wettest day so far of 2018 and the wettest first 4 days of September on record for Rochester. Flooding estimated to already have cost $50 to $100 million across Wisconsin, southeastern Minnesota, and parts of Iowa. A lot of rainfall records. And again, this is... It's not unprecedented. It's rare to get these kinds of rain events in early September. This would be more typical of late May, early June. And, you know, we have that frost advisory for north central and northeastern Minnesota, but I keep reminding people that Canadian air immunizes us, inoculates us from the most fearsome storms on Earth.
Storms, love those Canadians.
Storms with names.
Maple cookies.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that all that...
What's it called? Poutine?
Excuse me? You can't poutine. Say that it's on like the air.
Fries with gravy
hit,
and...
Hit the dump switch, Susan.
Good, right?
Poutine?
All things Canadian.
That's where you pour cheese over fries,
and
right?
Gravy involved.
Gravy, yeah.
Look delicious.
So anyway, what's left of Gordon now, a pinwheel of flooding rains is pushing towards Little Rock and maybe some flooding in St. Louis and Cleveland and even Pittsburgh in the days ahead. Many times we focus on what's happening at landfall, as we should, but days after these storms move inland, they're still producing flooding rains. Inland flooding, something that doesn't make the news as often. Mm-hmm. And it's still way out there, but the European model, which tends to do a better job than some of NOAA's models, specifically the GFS, you know, beyond 3-4 days, is bringing Florence.
You know that the rest of us don't know what GFS means.
The Global Forecast System. It's the global model. It's NOAA's premier global weather model.
Did you invent it?
I did not invent the GFS. I invented Doppler.
Okay.
No, I did not. Some other stuff I did with the help of some very smart colleagues. But here's the thing. It's hot and sweaty right now in New York and D.C. and Philly. It's 95. It feels like 100 to 105. In September, they have heat advisories, and there's a giant Bermuda Ridge, a giant blob of unusually hot air sitting over the Northeast, which may force Florence, which is a Category 3 hurricane, still way out there in the Atlantic, but it's got 130-mile-an-hour winds. The models bring this thing into either the Carolinas, the Mid-Atlantic, even New York City.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
By the end of next week. So that's rare, and we will see. But the fact that the Euro, which, and we have data showing that that is the best weather model on Earth, the Euro is bringing this thing into the Northeast, and then it sits there for a few days. So, again, remind me not to complain about the frost advisories and the foggy mornings and even the rain. We have no storms with names.
That's true. And no Florence, no Gordon.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too. We're going to thank you for weather therapy. We're going to take more calls on reaction to the New York Times piece, the anonymous op-ed. Talking about what it's like inside the Trump administration. We're also going to talk to Kim Crockett about the Kavanaugh hearings today. She's from the American Experiment, the Kavanaugh hearings, and the Mueller investigation, the latest on that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. And also, Mr. Osterholm,
yes.
Right? Dr. Osterholm?
Yes.
Osterholm?
Yes.
I should have practiced. Anyway, epidemiologist talking about what on earth may have happened on that Emirates flight into JFK. 100 people or more, all suffering from high fevers, coughing. That set off some alarm bells.
Think?
They quarantined the plane. What's the latest? We don't want to jump to conclusions, but hopefully he can walk us through that. That's coming up on CCO.
Did you get a letter saying that your health care was terminated?
No.
That's a good thing. You're not on Medicare yet, that's why. More than 38,000 Medicare beneficiaries with health plans from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota received terminations today.
Ouch.
But you know what? That was a mistake.
It was the computers.
Backsies. The letters are related to the elimination of Medicare cost health plans at the end of the year, which will prompt true health plan terminations for an estimated, 320,000 seniors across Minnesota. But the change won't affect consumers in 21 Minnesota counties, including Duluth. But those are Blue Cross customers who were wrongly sent termination notices on Tuesday from Blue Cross. So the agency said Blue Cross provided the government with bad information. Yes, it's all Blue Cross's fault with bad information. And that's why they were sent the letters. Look, if you got a letter, oopsie, but make sure you call and make sure everything's cool.
You know who didn't send out a letter?
Who's that?
Health Partners.
You go. You love your folks at Health Partners.
Look, I've been using them for a few years with my weather tech companies. We've had great results, no issues, and I've been doing spots on CCO TV and CCO Radio because, hey, I believe in them. They've been there for me. Can't ask for more than that. Not today. All right. This is not going to come as a shock. I know you do your yoga.
Oh, yeah.
You work out every morning.
Don't be crazy. Yeah.
Couch potatoes are more prone to disease. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
But they've done some new studies. 1 in 3 women and nearly 1 in 4 men worldwide don't exercise enough to avoid common diseases. You need at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity physical activity every week. It's not every day, every week. That's what's recommended. If you don't meet this bar, you are at greater risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, dementia, and some cancers, research shows. So 150 minutes. Can you do that all in one day? I guess you could. But I guess you should break it up, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Want to consider that. Anyway, kind of confirming the obvious.
According to best-selling management author Susie Welch, she says the last few minutes of a job interview can make or break your chances of getting the job. She says no matter how the interview goes, don't just say thank you at the end of the job. What do you think you're supposed to say?
Embrace them? Maybe a little kiss on the cheek?
Okay, you might want to avoid that.
No? Is that harassment?
This episode has really gone downhill. Nope. She says, don't just say thank you. What you should say is, thank you, and by the way, I really want this job. She says, you may worry that being so honest sounds desperate. She says, the rewards are worth the risk. Those words, I really want this job, demonstrates character traits, three character traits that they say they are looking, your new employer would be looking for. Sincerity, it shows a refreshing level of sincerity. It shows courage. I mean, that's kind of a hard thing to say. Look them in the eye and say, thank you, I really want this job. It's a hard thing to say. So it shows courage and it shows humility. It shows you're not prideful or overconfident, that this is your moment to acknowledge you are the buyer, I'm the seller, and that they get that.
That's interesting.
So courage, sincerity, and humility.
You know what I say when I'm after I shake hands and bow, and then walk out the door.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I'll get you the job right there.
Well, they'll remember me. They won't hire me, but they'll remember me.
It's a problem. It's kind of a problem.
In a bad way. Hey, this was a troubling story. I don't know what to make about this. A cluster of male breast cancer cases found in Ground Zero survivors. The people that helped to clean up after 9/11, at least 15 men who worked or lived around the World Trade Center during or after the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks have contracted breast cancer. Five are 9/11 responders, two city firefighters, an NYPD sergeant, an iron worker, and a highway repairman. I mean, there was stuff in that air. God knows what was in that air. Nearly 10,000 people have been diagnosed with cancers linked to the toxic dust and smoke, the World Trade Center Health Program has reported. In all, more than 1,700 responders and others affected have died, including 420 who had cancer. Mm. So you had the initial death toll, which was horrific, and then on top of that, a lot of cases of cancer because carcinogens in the air with that smoke.
Last Saturday, thousands of high school students from around the world took the SAT. What they didn't know was that SAT apparently had been floating around the internet for months. SAT watchers say the College Board, the organization that runs the exam, had recycled a test given in October overseas. And the exam's answers had been leaked on the internet.
You're kidding.
I know. And they say it'll give an unfair advantage. There are people who have cheated, which can have large repercussions of this. Because schools are so competitive today, someone who sees those results will probably use them to their advantage. The College Board shouldn't have reused parts of their test. Yeah, I know. So they'd been circulating on the internet. And any student who searched SAT results on the internet, I wouldn't even
think.
And
they come up?
Yes.
Oops.
Now, an enrollment chief said, you know, it's not unusual for them to reuse some questions. The difference is in this test, students who took it say it was the exact same version as the one that was available online. It was given in Asia, and it was posted on a Chinese website, and they found the answers.
Somebody's not getting a promotion, Jordina.
If you took the test this summer, you might be getting a call from the College Board saying, got to redo that one.
Oh, boy. Can you imagine if we took the SAT exam now?
Us? Oh, forget about it. Oh, my God. No.
Is it true you get points for just writing your name?
That used to be the rumor
back in our
day.
Is that an urban legend?
Who knows?
Not a lot of points. Hey, you know who you don't want to hang out with? You and handsome husband, Mark?
Oh.
Dylan McWilliams.
Okay, who's that
Dylan
guy?
McWilliams. He's a 20-year-old resident of Colorado, and recently he's been mauled by a bear, bitten by a rattlesnake, and he was just attacked by a shark.
What?
He's in Hawaii right now. We'll just call him Dylan.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a 2-week vacation, beach time, surfing. Late last week, he was paddling in the waters just off the south shore of Kauai. Something hit his leg.
Oh, no.
I was looking around, saw a lot of blood, saw a shark underneath me. I started kicking at it and swam as fast as I could to shore. Now, this comes on top of what happened last summer. He was working as an instructor teaching survival skills in Boulder County, Colorado. One night, he was asleep. A bear showed up at his campsite.
No.
It pulled me into its mouth, and then it grabbed me with its teeth right back here. Apparently, it tore the skin on his scalp, and he heard a cracking noise. That's generally not good.
Come on.
A few years ago, Dylan was bitten by a rattlesnake while hiking in Utah. Despite the close calls, Jor, he says he's not afraid of wildlife. Rather, he loves it. He considers the late Steve Irwin to be one of his idols. That's the crocodile Dundee guy,
Crocodile
right?
Hunter, yeah. Wait. Bitten by a shark. A snake.
Attacked
by a bear. And he still actually leaves the house?
He loves the outdoors.
Okay. That's complete insanity.
Not sure I want to go camping with this guy.
That's complete insanity. Time for one more?
Sure.
There's an avocado shortage in New Zealand.
Oh, God, no.
And it's fueling a crime wave. Since January, there have been close to 40 large-scale thefts from avocado orchards, as many as 350 of the fruit, yes, avocado is a fruit, stolen per time. It's suspected lots more thefts have been unreported. Now, the avocados are selling between $4 and $6 each. Can you imagine paying $4 for an avocado? We pay, what, about a dollar for them here at Costco?
Yeah, maybe, but when you have a craving for an avocado.
Stop it.
Let's see, Cheetos or a big, juicy avocado.
I love avocados as much as the next guy, but let me tell you, I must be cheap because there's no way I'm paying $6 for an avocado.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, there was a poor season last year. It increased local demand, and now people are fighting each other for them. It's crazy. It's crazy that there's a crime wave in New Zealand because of the avocado. So there you go. We should be shipping them there. There's high demand.
It's very tragic.
Glad I got it in.
Please, send money.
You needed to know.
Let's come up with a GoFundMe site for the people of New Zealand to fund their avocado binge.
Someday I'm going to write a tell-all book about what it's like to work with Mike Max and how we have to keep him in line.
Speaking of which, you just said we're football tournament.
Every once in a while, I hear it. my accent? Yeah. My family's in town for the bar mitzvah, that's why.
I know, you guys start talking to each other.
It's fast.
My dad was a financial planner, you know, and grew up, and this is not this is just an observation that we as kids would have. If a farmer called him that spoke like a Fargo farmer, about halfway through the conversation, you'd hear him start to talk. Yeah. He wouldn't even realize he's doing it, you know?
No kidding. Yep. Yeah.
And we'd laugh at him.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
They don't talk with an accent out in Eden Prairie at Winter Park, do they?
Yeah, I was just saying, Winter Park, everybody's wondering what's going to happen to this property. Well, this has been a little secret that we've been keeping for a while. But Lifetime Fitness is going to lease it. And what they're going to do is they're going to make it a soccer facility.
Huh.
And they're taking it a step further. They don't want it to be too structured, but they want to have some supervision. So it's going to allow, you know, if you're a member and you sign up for the soccer portion of it, you can go there. And there'll be referees and supervision, but they want it to be more pickup soccer, so it's more fun than
just.
So you're not playing games, keeping score, or who's on what team, who made the A team. It's kind of like whenever you want to show up, we'll have somebody there to kind of referee it and make sure that it, you know that there is some sense of organization to it. So Lifetime is going to take that property over on a lease basis and kind of betting on the come to see if soccer is you know. Warrants it and facilitates it, and then I would imagine that if it does, then they'll try to make a long-term deal or buy the piece of property.
Smart. 30 seconds. What's new with the Vikes? Anything?
Was out there today. Kirk Cousins talking about his, you know, the first game of the season. And all
no
the
pressure.
No pressure at all, man.
No.
He says I got to first have a good meeting, then I got to have a good walkthrough, then I got to have a good press conference. And what his point was, you got to do it one thing at a time. It ain't Sunday yet, so let's just go one at a time. But even Mike Zimmer says, you know, as much as you prepare, as much as you think. First games you don't know.
Some butterflies. Even the pros feel butterflies. We'll be back with more on CCO. Thanks, Max.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.